You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
In 2019, the federal NDP entered an election with high hopes. They had a new leader who was loved on social media, who represented the diversity of Canada and gave voice to the struggles of poor and marginalized Canadians. It seemed like a perfect fit. But it turns out that the campaigning part of the gig, particularly in your first try as a party leader, isn't that easy.
Third time of asking. It's not a hard question.
Third time of asking.
Is it appropriate to put up
Sir, I'm just going to finish my sentence.
A reliable system that we know we can depend on, and that's what we have to follow.
Sir, I know you're criticizing the Trump administration, but China's detained two Canadians. I just wonder if you got your eye on the ball here.
A number of embarrassing gaffes had voters, and even some in his own party, questioning NDP leader Jagmeet Singh's readiness. And in the months after the 2019 election, there were even whispers he might be replaced. As you know by now, that didn't happen. And now Singh, in his second campaign as NDP leader, seems poised to take advantage of his experience and popularity. So what will it actually take for the third place party in the polls to pull off the sort of upset the Liberals managed in the 2015 election? How much has a second chance at a federal campaign benefited both Singh and his party? And what do Singh and the NDP have to offer Canadians, and why should we vote for them? Today, the first in a series of episodes looking at the leaders who have a chance to become Canada's next Prime Minister and examining what it will take to get them there. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Jen Gerson is a writer and commentator for publications across the country. She is also the co-founder of the political commentary site, theline.substack.com. Hey, Jen.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. It's only 10 days into the campaign, but I wanted to start by asking you, how in the first week and a half have Jagmeet Singh and the NDP performed?
I don't think that they have come out of the first week necessarily the winners, but they haven't lost by default, is what I would say. I mean, I think from my perspective, all eyes have been on the first week or the first couple of days for the Liberal Party and how they have performed out of the gate. And I think the answer is pretty unanimously not particularly well. And that creates openings, of course, for both the Conservatives and for the NDP to sort of come up. I think that's created openings for the other two parties. Whether or not the NDP or the CBC is going to be able to capitalize on the openings that the Liberals have given them, I think it remains an open question. Early polling is suggesting that Jagmeet Singh is doing reasonably well. His personal approval rating is very high. I mean, I think he's got the highest personal approval rating, even in places like Alberta. People really like the guy, and I think the fact that this is his second time out of the gate is working for him. He's clearly much more at ease. Some early policy positions that he's put forward, I think, have been a bit hit and miss. His $5,000 plan for renters, I mean, I think anybody with a smattering of economic sense should be able to point out that that is basically just Ralph Bucks, you know, times five. If that policy were to actually be enacted, that money is just going to go straight to landlords, and it's going to go straight to Visa and MasterCard bills, as other similar kinds of government handout programs of that nature tend to go to. So I don't think it's going to make any real difference for supply-related issues. Also, I think that, if you're going to talk about the NDP as a serious contender in this race, you know, we have to fairly look at some of the policies that they're putting forward and the fact that they're effectively uncosted. It's just funny money territory at this point.
Well, I'm going to get into that with you in just a moment. But the first thing I want to do, because you mentioned it, maybe compare Singh at this point in the race to the Singh we saw in his first federal campaign in 2019.
Oh, much better. Yeah, much better. I mean, I think that he's a much better performer, and he's much more comfortable. He's much more in his skin. And, you know, unlike other progressive parties who shall remain unnamed, Green Party, you know, this is a party that's actually appears to be behind him. I mean, I interviewed Singh for The Line a couple of weeks ago, and I was actually very impressed by him. He was well-briefed. He's a smart guy. He was much more at ease answering questions at that time than even Aaron O'Toole was. So I think he's a strong contender. He's a strong candidate, and he's a strong sort of successor to the Jack Layton kind of mold of NDP leader, which is why you could see a surprise success from coming from him right now, I think.
One of the things you wrote about, I believe it was for Maclean's, is how important it was for him and for the party to give him a second campaign. Because, you know, you and I can both think back to 2019 and the months after he lost that race, there were some not so quiet whispers about whether or not he would get another shot.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about that, because you're quite right. Back in 2019, after his first outing, the Liberals kind of treaded water, and there was a sense that, like, maybe we made a mistake. Jagmeet Singh's not the right guy. However he managed to do it, he managed to consolidate power within his party and stay on for another round. And I think that was really important. I'm hoping that he does fairly well in this election, if for no other reason, to demonstrate the importance of giving political leaders an opportunity to grow into their roles. Like, we've kind of become deeply impatient with our political leaders because we've created these weird little cults of personalities in our political parties, where, you know, if they're not showing us ongoing results and progress and getting closer to government or something of that nature, or paying off their membership in some psychological way, you know, they get dumped very quickly. And the end result of that, if we continue on that trend, is that it means that only people with pre-existing celebrity or political or non-political celebrity are going to be able to make it as leaders, because, you know, it just takes time. It takes time to grow into the role of a leader. It takes time to figure out what that job's about. It takes time to consolidate power within a party, and it takes time to build name recognition. These things can't be done like every 18 months.
Can you contrast that maybe with what we're seeing from the Conservative Party over the last couple of elections? Because they are now heading into their second election in a row with a new leader. And how does that play compared to what Singh has been able to do in this second campaign?
Well, I hate to make any predictions at this point in the campaign, because I'm going to have them used against me on Twitter. But here's what I would note, is that, you know, Andrew Scheer, by any objective standard, made significant gains for the Conservative Party in the last election. He won the popular vote. You know, he managed to get more people into the tent, although, you know, it was the wrong people. They were overwhelmingly people from Alberta. However, the expectations had been set so high for him that he was going to form government, because the Liberals had, you know, messed the bed so dramatically that how in the world could a Conservative leader fail to take power after that disastrous 2019 Liberal campaign, that the general sense was like this guy was unelectable, that they had chosen someone who was too fuddy-duddy, a little too socially conservative, who was too unable to articulate his actual belief system, and who just messed up too dramatically, so that even though his objective results were very strong, he was a bad horse to back, and of course this led to the leadership contest that led to them selecting O'Toole, who is by any measure a pretty moderate conservative. The problem with that is that was only a year ago they selected O'Toole. They selected O'Toole a year ago, knowing very well that they were probably going to be heading into an election within the next like 6 to 18 months. And as a result, by the time this election started, O'Toole's personal approval rating was very low. And I think that was more a gesture or more of a result of the fact that people just didn't know the guy. Mm-hmm. Like he had no real time to establish himself, introduce himself. He had no name recognition. Like, and all of the lingering baggage that was attached to the Conservative Party just instantly got thrown on him. He was a bit of a nobody coming in. Whereas, you know, Singh's now been around for how many years, right? Like he's had time to establish himself and his character and to become this really likable figure. Singh also has some real advantages over someone like Trudeau. Like, right, Singh has the perpetual opposition leader's advantage, where you know, he can say the thing that everybody wants to hear, and he'll never be held accountable for any of his policy prescriptions. Like, right. He can go up there and promise $5,000, $10,000 to renters. Like, he can be the popular guy making these promises, because the odds that he's actually going to have to follow through on any of these promises and then balance a book or deal with the economic fallout for his policies are virtually nil. So he has, like all party leaders who are long shots for actually forming government, you know, he has the luxury of being the guy everybody can like.
Well, tell me about how long a shot that really is. And I realize it is a long shot, but also, as you mentioned, his popularity is easily highest among the major party leaders. The NDP have made gains in the polls. And, you know, you're not the first person to kind of say maybe there's a whiff of 2015 about this, where a third place party was able to really capitalize on a momentum.
Yeah, I think there's a non-zero chance that the NDP are going to essentially outflank the Liberals on the left in exactly the same way that the Liberals outflanked the NDP on the left in 2015. And there would be a certain poetic beauty to that, now, wouldn't there? Do I think it's a long shot? I mean, Jesus, at this point in the campaign, everything looks so weird right now, and the polling numbers are so, you know, tenuous. I really am trying to avoid making any kind of prediction at all.
Well, how about this then? Don't make a prediction, but tell me, what needs to happen? What does Singh need to do to kind of capitalize on that opportunity?
Here's the Liberal strategic problem. One, I think that they've 100% lost the youth vote. I think that most of their supporters from 2015 are extremely disillusioned. And I do think that, you know, Trudeau can no longer present himself as this new, forward-looking, optimistic, hopeful, of-the-future type figure. Because, I mean, he's been in power for 6 years, and what the hell has he accomplished aside from legalizing weed? Don't get me wrong, I'm very happy he legalized weed, but I don't see a lot of substantive policy movements from him in the last 6 years that give very many people on the progressive side reason to vote for him. I mean, even things like the CREB, right? Mm-hmm. All the parties would have put in the CREB. Like, the Liberals can't claim a special advantage on CREB. Second thing that's happening is that, like I said, I think there's a non-zero chance that the NDP are going to successfully outflank the Liberals on the left. And then the other thing that could go in the NDP's favor here is that if your concern with an NDP government is that they're just going to be spend crazy, how could they possibly be more spend crazy than the Liberals have already been? Right? Like, mm-hmm. Like we're looking at $100 billion deficits here, right? Like we're already printing money. We're printing money to make ends meet at this point. Is anything that the NDP is realistically going to move forward with going to be more financially irresponsible or crazy than what the Liberals have already done? So if you're kind of like one of those sort of centrist type figures who could maybe go conservative, maybe go liberal, maybe go NDP, depending on the party situation. And I do think there's a pretty significant chunk of those people out there. Does Singh personally cut a better figure than Trudeau? Yes, the polling numbers would dictate that he does. Okay, if your lingering concern with the NDP is that they're too left or they're too frivolous on the spending front, you've lost, the Liberals have lost you, because there's no reason to vote for the Liberals here and not the NDP if that's your primary concern. Mm-hmm. So like there's a strategic opening here, but I don't know who's going to be able to capitalize on it.
Who does Singh need to convince if he's going to make that run? You know, you mentioned the youth vote is a huge thing. Whether or not they vote will be a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, the youth vote is a huge thing until people realize that it's not a huge thing. I mean, like, not enough youth vote. That's the primary issue. Now, if the election is so close that a youth vote, even a small youth vote, can push one party over the edge, okay, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I think that he would need to convince people outside of the traditional progressive bubbles that he is no more crazy a choice than Trudeau. That is, and I think that if he can significantly cannibalize a lot of the Liberal vote, you could see a start to shift to more of a two-party parliamentary system where you have like a lot of the progressives just shift over to the NDP side and a lot of the conservatives shift over to the CPC side. And that just changes the math on parliament. I mean, you did see a similar kind of thing happen in Alberta when the old PC party kind of splintered, collapsed, started to split the conservative vote, the NDP, the remaining sort of 40% of Albertans who were actually more to the left, elected an NDP government. And what you have now in Alberta after an election cycle of that or two is a two-party system, essentially, where if you're progressive and you were formerly like Alberta Liberal or whatever, you're now NDP. That's just what you are. And if you're on the conservative, you're now UCP. Could you see in that kind of scenario a Canadian parliament moving toward more of a two-party system with the left largely coalescing around the NDP and the right largely coalescing around the conservatives? Yeah, I don't think you could rule that out. I really don't. I think that if you could see that happen in two elections in Alberta, you could see that happen in an election or two here in Canada too.
When will you start taking the possibility of that seriously? You know, we mentioned off the top, this is just 10 days in, and the polls have really fluctuated since this election started. And what I'm trying to wrap my head around is, when will we know that there's enough momentum here and we're close enough to the finish line to start wondering if they can close the deal?
I'd say about a week to 2 weeks. After Labor Day is going to be the big test of a lot of this. If you're starting to see sustained momentum in the next 2 weeks, then we're going to see whether or not anyone will be able to close a deal. I would say sort of between September 7th and 20th is going to be the big go time. Right now, I think we're about establishing overall narratives, and we're about sort of seeing who can pick up the mo. The big question of the race right now is whether or not the Conservatives would continue to make the same mistakes that they made under Andrew Scheer, and what the overarching rationale for the election is, and that needed to be articulated by the Liberals. I think that two things have happened. One, the Liberals have failed to articulate a rationale for calling the election, so we don't know why we're here. And that means they've lost control over the ballot question, over what the ballot question will inevitably be. And the second thing is, like, the Conservatives learn their lessons. They're not falling into every ridiculous roadrunner-style trap that the Liberals are setting. And you can tell that the Liberals are kind of panicking about it, right? Because they keep on just throwing more stuff at it. Like they're throwing spaghetti at a wall, seeing what'll stick, which tells me that they've lost their internal discipline. They've lost whatever strategy or campaign scripting they came into this election with. They've lost it. They're totally off the plot, and now they're basically improvising. So that's the opening, right? Like, that's the moment when you say, okay, now we can start to see movement. But that being said, I mean, nobody's paying attention right now. The electorate is largely not paying attention right now. So I'd say, like, if the polling is consistently showing a volatile electorate past September 7th, then we could be playing baseball.
So last question then. Let's say you have Singh's ear for a few minutes between now and then. What should he do? Should he try to sit back and stay out of this till it gets serious so he doesn't score an own goal? Should he be aggressively going after the left or the right? Like, what's your message to him?
It seems to me like a lot of the NDP's problems is that their entire base has been effectively cucked. And by that, I mean their entire base has been convinced that in order to keep the Conservatives out of power, they have to continue to support the Liberals, which is a party that all of them hate, but they all kind of grudgingly go to it. He's got to convince his own base that isn't a good strategy anymore, that he is actually best positioned to put a leash on the Conservative Party, an emergent Conservative Party. Now, that's not an implausible argument. If you were to start to see a real surge in Conservative support, like to the point where they could potentially be forming government, all Singh has to be able to do is say, look, I need to get more votes than Trudeau. And then potentially, like, I'm now in the driver's seat and we can keep the Conservatives out of power. Like, he needs to convince his own base that essentially he's a credible alternative to Trudeau. Until he can actually do that, incumbency is always going to win here. That would be it. I'm constantly shocked by how many NDP supporters there are out there who fundamentally don't believe in their own party. You know, like, they just don't. They're just like, we hate Trudeau, we hate the Liberals, but you know what? The Conservatives would be worse. Well, you know, enough people believe that, and your party is never going to get ahead. You're always going to be playing this strategic voting game. Now, as like I said, the reason why I think that the NDP may have a shot at overcoming that hesitancy is because they can make a credible argument that's like, well, are the Liberals the best strategic option against the Conservatives? Is that a convincing argument in 2021? And like, is there anything crazier about an NDP government than a Liberal one at this point? I don't think there is. I think that, you know, Singh's got to go after the Liberals. You will be able to tell how desperate the Liberals are by whether or not they're attacking the Conservatives or the NDP. If they think things are going relatively well, they'll attack the Conservatives. If they're panicking, they're going to go after the NDP. So Singh's got to be prepared for that fight because the oppo guns are going to be turned on him if things are going well for him. I don't think anybody's lost the opportunity to win here. I really don't. I think that I wouldn't be shocked to see a Liberal majority in 3 or 4 weeks. You know, like it just that could happen. Yeah, and I think that overall, Singh has a real Jack Layton-like opportunity to recreate the Orange Crush of 2011, and I think that could be really interesting if that happens.
It'll be fascinating to watch. Jen, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was Jen Gerson, who you can find at theline.substack.com. That was The Big Story. For more, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can talk to us on Twitter, where everything is politics, at TheBigStoryFPN. And you can email us at thebigstorypodcast@rci.rogers.com. As you know by now, we are in every single podcast player out there. I would really like your help if you find one that we are not in. We will make the necessary adjustments. Thank you for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.